This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for August 2015. And the good thing is that the nights are getting slightly longer. And the other really good thing this month is that when the Perseid meteor shower is at its peak around the middle of the month, there's no moon. So there'll be nothing, assuming we get some clear skies, to stop us observing a wonderful array of meteor trails in the sky. Well, let's start with the stars that we can see. As sunset fades away, the bright star Arcturus in Bootes is setting on the western horizon. But in the south, fairly high, is that wonderful region of the sky with three stars, Vega in Lyra, Deneb in Cygnus, and Altair in Aquila, making up what's called the Summer Triangle. The Milky Way runs through here, so it's a very rich part of the sky to observe. If you follow the line from Altair up towards Vega, about a third of the way, you actually cross a fairly dark region of the Milky Way. It's called the Cygnus Rift. And in there is a very nice little asterism called Brocky's Cluster, or more commonly called the coat hanger. It looks like an upside-down coat hanger. But then rising in the southeast, we have the Great Square of Pegasus. And that is a way to find one of the loveliest objects in the heavens, the Andromeda Galaxy. You start at the star called Alpheratz, which is the top left-hand corner of the Square of Pegasus, although it's actually in Andromeda. You go left one bright star, slightly fork right up to the next bright star, then turn right through a right angle, one fairly bright star, and the same distance again with binoculars, and even under dark skies, your unaided eyes, you should see a little fuzzy glow. And that's the Andromeda Galaxy. And the thing I like about it is that the photons that are falling on your retina left there 2.5 million years ago. You are literally looking back into time. What about the planets? Well, there's only one planet that's actually visible out of twilight hours, and that's Saturn, as we shall see. But in fact, we can, if we try hard, see virtually all of them. Now, Jupiter is going to pass behind the Sun on August the 26th, so we can only really see it in the first few days of the month, in the twilight hours, low in the west after sunset. Now, Venus actually passes 6 degrees below Jupiter on July the 31st, so it'll be close for the first few days of the month, but they'll both becoming progressively more difficult to observe. It was great to observe the two very close together, still reasonably high at twilight, during the first part of July. As I said, Saturn is the only bright planet visible outside twilight hours. It lies in Libra, near the wide double star Alpha Librae, falling in brightness a little from 0.4 plus to plus 0.5 magnitudes. It ceases its retrograde motion, that's westwards in the sky, on August the 2nd, so will begin to move eastwards back towards Scorpius. 1 hour after sunset, it will lie about 20 degrees above the horizon, so the atmosphere will limit our view a bit of its 17 arc-second disk. But the ring system, now about 24 degrees open, should still show nicely, along with Titan, its largest satellite. Saturn gets to a point 90 degrees east of the Sun, it's called Eastern Quadrature, on August the 21st. So the globe's shadow on the rings is at its maximum extent, giving a rather three-dimensional view to this, our most beautiful planet. Mercury. This month, Mercury turns to the twilight sky before sunset. During the month, it rises a little higher in the sky during the twilight hours. Mars. As August begins, Mars, shining at magnitude plus 1.7, rises about 70 minutes before the Sun, so obviously seen low in the east before sunrise. This increases to 2 hours by month's end, with the brightness virtually unchanged at plus 1.8 magnitudes. On August the 8th, at an elevation of just 5 degrees, it will lie below Castor and Pollux in Germany, about 45 minutes before sunrise. And on the 20th and 21st of the month, it will lie close to M44, the Beehive Cluster, or Praesepe, in Cancer. Venus. Well, Venus rises at sunrise on the 18th of August, but 55 minutes before the sun a week later, and about an hour 30 minutes earlier by month's end. As it does so, its brightness brightens from minus 4.1 to minus 4.5 magnitudes. That's virtually as bright as it ever gets. And its angular size reduces slightly from 58 to 52 arc seconds, while the percentage illuminated area of the planet, that's called the phase, increases from 1 to 9%. So close to the sun, it's not really safe to observe after sunrise. So finally, what about some highlights of the month? Well, during August, it's good to find two lovely objects not far from the summer triangle. One is virtually in it. The first is the globular cluster M13 in Hercules. Two-thirds of the way up the right-hand side of the four stars that make up the keystone in the constellation Hercules is M13, the best globular cluster visible in our northern sky. Over to the east, just left to the bright star Vega in Lyra, is the multiple star system Epsilon Lyrae, often called the double-double. With binoculars, a binary star is seen, but when observed with a telescope on a still night, each of those two stars is revealed to be a double star, hence the name. August is also a good month to observe Neptune with a small telescope. It comes into opposition, that's when it's nearest to the Earth, on the 31st of August. So it will be seen well both this month and next. Its magnitude is plus 7.9, so Neptune, with a disk just 3.7 arc seconds across, is easily spotted with binoculars lying in the constellation Aquarius. And on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, there's a chart that shows you exactly where to look. It rises to an elevation of about 27 degrees when due south. Now, given a telescope of 8 inches or greater aperture and a dark, transparent night, it should be even possible to spot its moon Triton. And that's certainly something I want to try and do by the end of the month. On August the 8th, 45 minutes before sunrise, you can see Mars below Castor and Pollux in Gemini, as I said earlier. The good news about Mars is that during this apparition, when it's closest to us in May next year, its angular diameter will reach 18.6 arc seconds, in comparison to the meagre 14 arc seconds that we had in the last two apparitions. But sadly, it'll then be at a rather low elevation. On August the 7th, Jupiter and Mercury are close together in Leo, also close to the star Regulus. It's one of the last chances to observe Jupiter this apparition, and given clear skies and a low western horizon, you should be able to spot Jupiter, Mercury and Regulus within a 1 degree diameter circle. So binoculars will easily show it, as will a low power eyepiece on a small telescope. Both planets are nearly fully lit, but Jupiter's 31 arc second disk will appear significantly less bright than Mercury's disk, some 6 times smaller. Now perhaps the real highlight of this month is the Perseid meteor shower, visible on the mornings of the 12th, 13th and 14th, perhaps between midnight and dawn. The Perseid meteors are produced by debris from the comet Swift-Tuttle. The peak of the shower is actually after sunrise on the morning of the 13th, so before sunrise that morning will be the best chance, if clear, of viewing the shower. But the peak is actually quite broad, so it's well worth observing on the nights before and after, or should I say early mornings. Most meteors are seen looking about 50 degrees from the radiant, which lies between Perseus and Cassiopeia, in fact not far from the lovely double cluster in Perseus. And the great thing about this year is that with new moon on the 14th, there will be no moonlight to hinder our view on the days around the peak. Under cloudless skies, from a dark location, one might expect to see 50 to 70 meteors an hour near the peak. That's during the last hours of darkness on the morning of the 13th. I'll never forget a night on the 13th in 1999, just following that total eclipse of the sun that happily we actually saw down in the Isles of Scilly. And on that night, several of us went up to observe, and in 45 minutes, we observed 75 meteors. So it's really worth having a try. And very quickly, on August the 22nd, an hour after sunset, Saturn will be close to a first quarter moon, looking west before dawn. Saturn in Libra will be seen close to the first quarter moon. A good horizon in the south-southwest will be needed. I sometimes point out things to observe in the moon. There's an object called the straight wall, although, to be honest, it's not a wall, but a gentle scarp, and Sir Patrick said, neither is it a wall, nor is it straight. It's best observed one or two days after first quarter, or a day or two before third quarter, so about the evening of the 4th of August, or the evening of the 17th August, should it be clear, will be the best time to observe it. It's actually a very nice object to observe on the moon. So, a bit to do this month, and say, nights are slightly longer, which is a good thing. Best of luck.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Southern Hemisphere, here's Claire Bretherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the August Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory. We're very lucky here in the Southern Hemisphere to have lovely clear skies and much less light pollution than in the Northern Hemisphere. We also look towards the centre of our galaxy, so we generally see more stars from the Southern Hemisphere than Northern Hemisphere observers. In this month's Jodcast, we'll look at some of these stars and some other objects that can be spotted from here with binoculars or a small telescope, and also with the naked eye. These last few months, we've had some beautiful planets regaling the sky, and this will continue into August. At the beginning of the month, three bright planets appear low in the western evening sky soon after sunset. Brilliant silvery Venus is the brightest and highest, with golden Jupiter below and right. Mercury is well below the two bright planets on August the 1st, but moves quickly up the sky night to night as Venus and Jupiter sink lower. On the 7th, Mercury is just a full moon's diameter to the right of Jupiter. Venus is left of the close pair of planets, and all three set about 70 minutes after the Sun. Mercury continues its ascent of the evening sky through August, while Venus and Jupiter disappear in the twilight. By the end of the month, Mercury is setting due west after 8 p.m, making its best evening sky appearance of the year. The bright orange star Arcturus is setting in the northwest, well to the right of Mercury, often flashing red and green as it goes. After passing between us and the Sun mid-month, Venus will appear in the eastern dawn twilight. By the 20th, it will be rising in the east an hour before the Sun. Venus will remain the morning star for the rest of the year. August sees the Milky Way stretching east to west across our evening sky. Along this path, we find the majority of the bright stars in our night sky. In the north, to the left side of the Milky Way is Vega, the fifth brightest star in the sky. Vega is about 25 light-years away and around 40 times brighter than the Sun. It forms part of the constellation of Lyra that represents an ancient stringed instrument. Opposite Vega in the south, Canopus is the second brightest star in the night sky and twinkles with a yellow tint. This star is 310 light-years away and 15,000 times brighter than the Sun. To the Polynesians, this star is Atutahi, the navigator, considered by Maori as the chief of all the stars in the sky. Canopus was also the navigator of Argo Navis, the ship in which the Argonauts searched for the Golden Fleece. Argo Navis was once the biggest constellation in the sky, but was subdivided in 1752 into Carina, the keel or the hull of the ship, Papis, the poop deck or stern, and Vela, the sails. These constellations now hold the asterisms known as the False and Diamond Crosses, which are adjacent to Crux, the Southern Cross. The Diamond, False and Northern Crosses are asterisms, which means they are not true constellations. However, the Southern Cross is a constellation, the smallest of the 88 official constellations in the sky, and is in fact smaller than both the Diamond and False Crosses. Crux is lying on its side after sunset, and will drop lower as the night progresses. Over the evening, we see the stars rotating clockwise around a point in the sky that we call the South Celestial Pole. This point would sit overhead if you were at the South Pole. In the Northern Hemisphere, the North Celestial Pole is marked by the North Star Polaris. However, the star that marks the South Celestial Pole, Sigma Octantis, is barely visible and cannot be seen well with the naked eye. So here we can only estimate the position of the southern celestial pole using the stars, such as the Southern Cross. Above Crux are Alpha Centauri, the third brightest star, and Beta Centauri, the 11th brightest star in our night sky, which point you towards the Southern Cross and appear to follow it around the sky. The southern sky is filled with spectacular globular clusters, and Omega Centauri, the brightest of all, is well placed for viewing this month. It can be seen as a fuzzy star to the north of Beta Centauri. With a small telescope, the cluster becomes a glowing, shimmering ball of stars, with many individual stars visible towards the outskirts of the cluster. Sitting about halfway above the southern horizon as the Southern Cross sinks towards its lowest position in the sky is the faint constellation of Tucana, the Toucan. Alpha Tucanae is a magnitude 2.8 star about 200 light-years away. Beta Tucanae is a loose group of six gravitationally bound stars approximately 140 light-years away. The two exceptional objects in the Toucan are the Small Magellanic Cloud and 47 Tucanae, the second brightest globular cluster in the sky. The SMC is visible to the unaided eye as a cloudy smudge in the sky. But the secret to viewing it properly is to use peripheral vision to bring out more detail. Peripheral vision is a trick that visual astronomers use to spot very faint objects, such as nebulae, clusters, or galaxies. Try to look at the object with the tip of the eye rather than directly at it, as if you are looking just to the side of it, and you should be able to see much more. The Small Magellanic Cloud is best viewed from a dark location, and it is bright enough to be seen from many suburban locations as long as the moon and local lighting are not too bright. It is a dwarf galaxy of several hundred million stars, about 200,000 light-years away, one of the nearest neighbours of our own Milky Way. With any size telescope or good binoculars, a number of star clusters can be seen in and around the SMC. Sitting beside the SMC and also visible to the eye as a fuzzy star is 47 Tucanae. It is a globular cluster consisting of millions of ancient stars. This cluster is a stunning sight in binoculars or telescopes. There is another larger and brighter cloud to the right of the SMC. This is the Large Magellanic Cloud, or LMC, another of our galactic neighbours, lying even closer at just 160,000 light-years away. The Magellanic Clouds, the Crosses, Alpha and Beta Centauri, and all of these beautiful clusters in the south are objects that can always be seen in our southern night sky, as they are circumpolar. This means they never set below our horizon. Saturn is the only bright planet in the late evening sky. A small telescope shows Saturn's ring system and biggest moon Titan, looking like a star about four ring diameters from the planet. More powerful telescopes should reveal faint banding in the planet's atmosphere, along with gaps and variation in colour of the rings. This object, more than any other, will get a great response from first-time observers. They are always surprised how much the planet looks like it does in the pictures, albeit very much smaller. Thank you for listening to the August Jodcast. I will shortly be heading off on maternity leave, so our new curator of science, Haritina Mogasano, will be stepping in to produce the Southern Skies section over the next few months. I look forward to catching up with you all again when I return in the new year. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.